Radio CSS Media,
your source for family-centered content.
RadioCSS.com.
And now, Audio Theater Central.
Oh, hi there. I'm John Avery Whittaker. But most folks around here call me Whit.
My name is Finian Jones, and you are...
Hello, I'm Dave Arnold, your host for Focus on the Family Radio Theater.
Hello, I'm JD.
I'm Roy.
And I'm Andrew. We are your hosts for Audio Theater Central.
Welcome to episode 38.
It is great to have you with us today. We've got a lot of cool stuff coming up, but first of all, I wanted to say a happy birthday to Roy and Andrew.
I just want to say happy birthday to
happy
JD
birthday,
and
JD
Andrew.
And Roy.
Yeah. Yes, today is the third year, or this episode.
Third birthday.
Yeah.
This episode is the third birthday that we have been producing Audio Theater Central. So, happy birthday. Blow out a few candles and have some... donuts.
Exactly.
Yes.
We weren't able to get Wooten to come around to do the birthday song, but we tried.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to make a big deal about it, but we wanted to mention that and let you guys know that we're having a blast doing this, and hopefully we'll go for at least 3 more years.
Yes.
Well, we've got a review of Jonathan Park Volume 9 coming up called The Whispering Sphinx. And we've also got a newscast coming up here shortly. But before we get to that, wanted to quickly mention, I know we've mentioned this in the past, but I just wanted to mention it again just for all of you out there who didn't know about it. Mark over at the AIO Wiki has put together an amazing Android app for your smartphone, for your Android phone, that plays all of the current Odyssey episodes. And it's... one of my favorite apps right now. I've been using it for several months. And just wanted to mention it again, in case you weren't aware, all of the same stuff that you can get on the Wits End website, all of the current ones that they're playing, plus all of the free episodes that they've ever given in the past, and all of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcasts can all be accessed right in that app. You can build a playlist and just play them back to back to back. So just wanted to throw that out there. And thank Mark for doing that. He's not getting anything for that monetarily, but it's a great app, and I use it a lot, almost every day. And so just wanted to mention that again. And there's a link in the show notes where you can go and download that. So check that out. All right, Roy?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
There's a brand new audio drama series coming soon. It's called Three Friends, One Secret... and it centers around the Grant family and is a mix of action, adventure, mystery, and sometimes just a day in the life of their family. The series will be premiering in the later part of October 2013. Season 4 of Lamplighter Theater kicks off this month with Titus, a Comrade of the Cross. According to executive producer Mark Canby, Titus will be followed by Jessica's Journey and then Candle in the Window. That's it for the news this time. I'm Roy, reporting for Audio Theater Central.
Another stupendous newscast.
I disagree. I just wanted to go on record by saying that I disagree with everything that's ever been said on this podcast. Hopefully that makes some people happy. just kidding.
Very good.
Yes.
Well, as we stated earlier, we want to take a look at Jonathan Park Volume 9, The Whispering Sphinx, a really great album. I've got a lot of notes about this one, so we should really dive into that. So, Andrew, will you start things off with your customary reading of the summary?
Well, I sure. That's not part of the summary, in case you're confused. Egypt is in political turmoil. On the verge of presidential elections, a mysterious tablet is found with a prophecy about the coming leader and his lineage to Pharaoh Ramses II. That's when the statue of the Great Sphinx begins to mysteriously speak, confirming the message of the tablet. Meanwhile, the creation response team has learned that the research of Egyptian chronologist Dr. Howard will shake the foundations of modern archaeology and affirm the accuracy of several Old Testament accounts. How does it all relate? Join Jonathan Park and the CRT as they race to the aid of a nation and unlock the mysteries of Egypt's past and present.
Very good. Yes. Exciting. And if that doesn't pique your interest enough, take a listen to this.
Comes a boss.
Oh, yeah. Just wonderful.
Well, well. Fancy meeting you here.
Hi.
Nice to see
Hello.
You.
Hello. Oh, wow. What a beautiful white horse.
Oh, Katie, this is an Arabian stallion. The fastest, most beautiful horse in all the world.
Wow.
Well, what are you doing here?
Well, we're actually here to look inside the Pyramid of Khufu.
Oh, well, then it's a good thing I happened along. You could not possibly get in there without me, especially considering the new regulations.
How convenient that you should show up at just this moment.
Yes, isn't it? Shall we go?
Yes, yeah, let's go.
Have you done as I have told you?
Yes, Effendi. The Brotherhood has been causing unrest in the city, and now they are moving against the tourists.
Soon the public themselves will request our help to control the chaos.
Soon Egypt will be ours.
What of the Americans?
We found the broken pieces of the statue in the garbage of their hotel room.
So it was the journal it contained. You have failed me, number two.
Oh, great Effendi. I beg your...
Silence! I am sure number three will control the situation. We will use the Americans to our own advantage.
Ooh, spooky.
Yes.
Very.
The Effendi.
I don't want to be a spoiler, but they all die at the end.
So, the first episode of Jonathan Park, volume number 9, The Whispering Sphinx, is parts 1 and 2, called The Sands of Time.
Yes, and this is really cool because it picks up right where the previous album left off. Mm-hmm. They're still in Israel, and it starts off with quite a bang.
Literally!
Yeah. Yes. And one of my favorite things about this album is that Akiva is back.
Yes, our famous tour guide. Yes.
Akiva is wonderful.
Yeah, he is just all around, just knows everything about everything. Yeah.
And can do anything.
About anything.
Fabulous character. I mean, I think this is... And of course, we're coming from this after only hearing 3 albums of the series. But I mean, this character is just awesome. Probably the best one of the 3 that we've heard.
Right.
But here's one thing that I thought was interesting. I thought it was a little odd that the writers would have him go to Egypt. I mean, we know that Israel and Egypt, they're not always on the best of terms. So I thought it was interesting that they brought an Israeli to Egypt, but other than that, I mean,
yeah,
it's great.
And throughout the series, you can hear it too. Like they're all
yeah,
like,
you can feel the tension.
The tension between like he's like with everybody else, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it starts off like just a few minutes in with Akiva just adding some comic relief, like his mistranslation of that saying on the statue.
Oh, yeah.
Hilarious. I mean, it just cracked me up. I forget what he said it was, but it was. Completely unrelated to what the saying on there said. It was basically saying to break the statue open.
Right.
And he was saying it said something like, the sands of time and all of this. And then whenever it's pointed out that, no, that's not what it says, he's like, well, I told you I couldn't read it very well.
I told you. He's got, his voice is just amazing how he plays it off. Anyway.
But one thing that I did not like is when he is corrected inside that antique shop by the antique dealer, the sound designers added that little sound effect in there like a, you know, like you're backing it up or a rewind kind of a, you know how you play that, you do that in.
The rewind sound.
That was totally out of place.
Hmm. I didn't catch that.
It totally took me out of the story.
Right, because you have like this real life thing going on, you know, you're in a real life scenario, then all of a sudden you just like. Sound that never happens in real life.
Yeah, exactly.
Except in post-production, this happens, but...
Right. And so I thought that was a little... Mm. That was way out of place, but...
Yeah.
The motorcycle chase scene was awesome.
I love how Akiva just takes Jonathan, like, wherever he goes. Like, come on, Jonathan, jump on. Like, poor kid. He's going to... Yeah. Not poor kid. That's really cool.
Do we know how old he is?
Jonathan?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm sure we can get a research team on it.
He's got to be at least 8 years old.
No. Okay, yeah, at least, yeah.
No, I don't know.
I'm not, saying he's not in
I'm
going
to guess he's about like 12 to 14 or something like that, but teenager. I'm not sure. I don't know if they've ever said, but
he's old enough to ride on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Yes.
That gives anything. But yeah, it's funny how Akiva, he's like, come on, Jonathan, let's go. And like, Jonathan's getting dragged along to all these like crazy experiences. It
happens more than once.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We'll
all the time.
More like later on in this review, but it's hilarious.
And that whole scene, I mean, the back and forth between Jonathan and Akiva is just laugh out loud stuff, you
definitely.
Know? I mean, it's great.
Definitely.
But one thing that I noticed was that when they do get this journal from Dr. Howard's assistant, they say something like the journal books were hidden in various places. But after that, as they're going and collecting throughout this story arc, they're not collecting pages. Books. They're collecting just pages from books.
Notes.
Yeah, notes. So I thought that was a little discrepancy that I noticed. Another thing about this two-parter, the whip scene with Abbas, when he gets that scorpion off of Akiva.
Yeah.
That was totally cool.
Yeah.
And then he has that line about a whip on the back of a Jew. You know, I'm like, wow.
Yeah. That was good. The whole thing with the tension thing again. The whole, like... Because they get another tour guide besides Akiva.
Mm-hmm.
That's Abbas. So, and
a local tour guide.
A local Egyptian tour guide.
Right, which you just heard in that clip there. Mm-hmm. Because, as he mentioned, the regulations at that time. But after we get through the episode by episode, we'll kind of go into our overall feelings about the story arc. But one thing that was interesting is they did work a lot of history and a lot of biblical teaching and stuff, which is standard for Jonathan Park.
Mm-hmm.
But also just little tidbits of things that are real, like the Egyptian Abyssinian, is that how you say it? The cat? I forget how it was pronounced, but that certain type of cat that they find.
Oh, yeah.
And Katie kind of takes it in.
They name it Sphinx.
That's an actual cat breed that's native to Egypt.
Oh.
And so I looked them up, and they do look sand-colored, as Katie mentions.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that was kind of cool how they worked different things like that.
And then the whole background, too, to the story about the unrest in Egypt and everything. It's very
absolutely.
True to life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
I like that part where, you know, again, Akiva is an Israeli, and he and Abbas have this kind of rivalry that's not always very pleasant. It's not like a... lighthearted. I mean, it's pretty real, and Akiva makes a comment about Abbas saying that I had a stray dog who was nice to me as long as I was feeding him.
Yeah. Is that the whole story you hear? Like, Akiva like doesn't really trust Abbas at all. He's always like, what? How convenient, you know?
Yeah.
However he says it. But, the rivalry between the two, I think it makes for a great story.
It definitely was a good plot point.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, they worked it in throughout the whole story, and it was great. And again, if you're unfamiliar with Jonathan Park, it's not like Odyssey. There's 12 episodes, but they are not standalone episodes. You have to listen to all 12 of them together. So the second two-parter is called Pyramid of Fear. And this is when the junior response team and the rest of them join the creation response team in Egypt. One thing, the voice of Benjamin Park... Kendall Park's father.
Yeah, the grandpa.
I like the voice, but something about the way that actor speaks, it just doesn't sound right to me.
Really? I actually kind of liked it. I don't know.
Really?
Just having, I liked his voice. Like, it's really like grandfatherly kind of, because, you know, he's the grandpa or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But, and when they talk, and I think it fit his character and what I thought, you know, would be a grandpa-ish. Voice.
Yeah, well, and the voice, I think, isn't right on, but a lot of times to me, it kind of sounded like he was reading.
Mm.
Yep, I heard that as well. And a couple of actors.
Yeah.
Actually, it was kind of funny. My wife walked in while I was listening to this and was like, didn't hear what was going on, didn't know anything. She's like, that actor sounds like he's reading. So it wasn't the grandfather, it was a different actor, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah, there were a few, but to me, he was the most noticeable. That I picked out, but the discovery of some journal pages in the pyramid,
which is interesting how it leads up to discover, because they're going to the pyramid to find them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then like the situation that takes place. And then I love that. I think it's in the pyramid where they had the line where all I wish I could, I would give anything for a can of 10W50.
Exactly.
DW50.
Yeah. DW50.
Yeah.
They have like all these like liners in here. They change everything. It's so funny.
I know.
Like DW50.
I was cracking up. Well, and then in this same two-parter, that's when we have a reporter from a news organization, and it's like the BBD or yeah. something yeah, like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah, that was pretty funny. Is it
the BBC?
Yeah.
But, yeah, that there's a lot of things like that that just are funny. And some people might not even catch it, but yeah. I think it's just it's hilarious. It's
so funny.
But, yeah, that whole scene where they're finding these pages – and they're trying to cover up the sound of them unscrewing that
yes.
bolt.
Yeah, singing old MacDonald had yeah. a farm. He's like, "What should we sing?" And Akiva goes on to singing like this, like Jewish
song.
He's like,
he's like, no.
He's like, "Old MacDonald have a farm." He's like, "Oh."
And then the whole mouse and the squeaking yeah, and the yeah. squeaky squeak, bolt. Squeak. Yes,
and they did that pretty good. Funny. Like they would, every time they would do the squeak, squeak here.
Yeah.
It was so funny. And the, a boss like, "What are you doing down there?" He's like, "Singing." He's like, "Yes,
we're singing a song while we're looking for clues to ancient Egypt's yeah. chronology." Or what? Like, okay, right. That was pretty funny.
So funny.
But even funnier than that, I think, is a little bit later on. Then here we have Akiva starting to sing that song again.
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
you know, Jonathan, that's a pretty catchy American tune.
I think the longer they can keep Akiva,
I know he's gonna have to come back.
The
to
better
America.
It'll be.
Yeah.
Either the parks stay on the Middle East out there, or Akiva comes back to him, or something.
Yeah.
He's just he's got to be like the all around tour guide for everywhere.
Yeah. And then of course Jonathan and Akiva are kidnapped and locked mm-hmm. into this underground chamber that's yes. being filled with water.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this is very Jonathan Park-esque. There's cliffhangers and action adventure throughout the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. And like perfect moments, like how only how Jonathan Park can, but like cliffhangers. And then they're like, "Hi, this is Jonathan Park. We'd like to introduce
yeah.
us." I'm like, "Oh, come on." What happens next? It's awesome. They throw in like these little promos in and stuff. It's great. Keeps you just like, ah, where's the fast forward button?
And I want to find out where I can sign up to be one of these people that runs around the world taking pictures and stuff, like they said.
Oh, yeah.
I know that hazardousjourneys.org.
Yeah. As a side note, this is like one of the promos in the story that they yeah. play, probably on one of those cliffhanger moments. But
yes.
And if you have not yet got this album, stay tuned.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot to mention this at the beginning, but
oh.
We have an album that we're going to give away.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Silly of me to forget that.
Yeah.
But one thing that was totally cool is this whole touring of the Sphinx reminded me of a computer game that I used to play years ago when I was a kid. A teenager. It was called The Riddle of the Sphinx. It was not like a PlayStation. It was an actual PC
mm-hmm.
game. Totally awesome.
Really?
I mean, it's one of the best computer games I've ever played. But what was so neat is, like, as they're going through these different chambers, and then they go into that funerary boat chamber, I've seen all of these because of this game. It
oh.
was so real and lifelike. But I've been in that virtually, obviously.
Right.
But in that funerary boat chamber and in the passage in the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid. I mean, so it's that all of these scenes that are they're going to see, these places the parks are going to see.
Like you're visualizing them
yeah.
in your mind. Wow.
That's totally cool.
That is really cool.
So I don't know if it's still around, but I don't even know. It probably wouldn't even work on modern-day computers,
right.
but it was a totally awesome game.
Wow.
That was, like, totally out of left field. But anyway, back to the story.
It's all good.
Part 3, The Curse of the Nile.
Mm-hmm. The Brotherhood of Sobek.
Yes. This is where we first hear about them. They're causing unrest in and around Cairo and different places in Egypt. But this episode starts off with an explosion in the marketplace, and we're like, wow.
Yes. Attack on the president and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that also happens
mm-hmm.
in this episode. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But here's the interesting thing. A lot of this stuff is like, wow. I was talking with Austin Peachy the other day about this series, and it's like a lot of this stuff is like coming out of the headlines, you know?
I know.
Exactly.
That's what I was listening to it, and I was like, what a crazy time to be listening to this. And I was like thinking of like everything that's going on in Egypt right now. You know, I was like, whoa, this is crazy. It's like Odyssey with the Novacom box. Now it's all
no. No, it really is. Odyssey was ahead of its time. You know, those things really exist, right?
Yeah. Look it up, folks. Look it up.
It's true.
That's why I have this compulsion to go buy fizzy yeah. soda or whatever.
Exactly.
Fizzy cola.
You yeah. can't. They have developed a video game system that you can play controlling your mind. It's true. Controlling it with your mind. Excuse me.
Okay. Anyway, back to...
I'm not joking. You guys keep looking at me like I'm nuts. It's no, the no. truth.
I know. Look it up on howstuffworks.com. It's true.
It's true.
It's true.
No, but I was laughing at your faux pas there, controlling your mind.
Controlling. Yes.
It's controlling your mind.
Yes.
You can't turn it off.
What does control your mind?
And back to the audio drama.
Andrew, you go so deep on these things.
So the CRT locates a possible place of the Hebrews' bondage, which I thought that was really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. I love all the info in these things.
I know the whole correlation. It's so funny. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, Jonathan, would you please look up in the Bible on your phone? It's like, and start reading about this. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it is pretty, like, there's probably no other way to do it, but the way that you know, introduce Bible verses all through it and stuff is just like. So funny. I think sometimes. It is cool,
like the history and everything. Like
I love it.
Yeah,
I love
the
it.
Pharaohs and different things.
And that's got to be one of the hardest things to work into a story and keep a story moving along, even while you're. Hey, I see that you have your Bible there on the desk. Why don't you open it and you know, blah blah blah. So that's got to be a hard thing to achieve.
And one of the cool moments in the album is, as you mentioned, that assassination attempt on the president. And here's the would-be assassin is trapped in his car, and it's on fire, and it's going to explode. And here Kendall goes and rescues him. And
yeah.
So, I mean, that was a really neat moment.
Yeah. Saves him. And that's, like, another, like, changer in a boss's life, too. Because he's, like, seeing
having
this.
Such an effect on a boss.
Mm-hmm, because he's, like, secretly employed by the Effendi. Spoiler alert.
You're supposed to say spoiler alert before you give the spoiler.
Okay, here we go.
But the spoiler alert,
spoiler alert.
I mean, it's like they reveal that in like the third episode.
They do talk about that. So
the Brotherhood of Sobek, they release all these crocodiles from the Living History Museum, which find their way into the Nile River, and the Parks just happen to be taking a boat on the the Nile at that same time.
Exactly.
And Kendall hear the sound of the crocodiles. And Kendall thinks Eddie's eating his food real loudly.
Yeah, that was really funny. Then, of course, the crocodile does, of course. It eats the boat. Of course, they're going to have a fight with a crocodile.
They're in Egypt, of course.
Yeah. It's natural.
Here's the one thing, though. Obviously, I'm not a scholar of Egypt or Egyptian chronology or history or anything, but... One thing that didn't jive with their message of always taking the Bible literally and straightforward and what it says, you know, because they make the comment that Pharaoh's daughter didn't come down to the river to actually bathe.
Oh, she's praying to the god.
Yeah, that she may have been praying to the gods for a child. But that doesn't jive with their always insisting on taking the Bible literally, because that phrase is in the Bible. It says she came down to bathe.
Right. That's true. Good point. Yeah,
I don't know if it. I mean, that's not really a big deal, but I mean, to me, I just thought it stood out to me that they're always pounding home, take the Bible for what it says, you know. But in this case, they kind of didn't do that. But Dr. Bruce at the mummy museum area or whatever that I don't remember the name of the establishment where they were at, but that guy was a good character.
Yes,
Jonathan, can you give me a hand?
Yeah,
and yeah, that was funny.
Puts it right out. And this is funny, too. The mummy starts to... There's a mummy. I was like, no way. They're not going to do this. There ain't no mummy coming. And sure enough, this mummy comes out walking after him. I was like, there's no way they're going to do this. And sure enough, it happens. This mummy comes chasing them.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And Kendall plays Frisbee with a trash can.
Yeah. Kendall just has like, hold on. I have this idea. And he's like, whoosh.
Yeah.
And of course,
awesome.
Smacks the mummy.
There just happened to be a trash can right there.
Right there. There just happens to be something all the time, you know. Kendall's packed foot. He's packed full of good things.
Flight to Suez is the next part. And this is where the Sphinx actually starts to whisper. This is the first time we hear of that. That was a great scene right at the beginning.
Yeah,
those guys
cool.
are packing up those.
The sound men.
Yeah.
That was really cool. I was like, represent the sound men.
There was a scene in here where Jeff Bates, which is Dr. Howard's
assistant,
which we did forget to mention that at the beginning, that bang we were talking about is that Dr. Howard's car explodes before the Parks get a chance to meet up with him and find out why he gave them that statue.
And it's a sad scene, too. It's like,
yeah,
man, he did, like, they have this whole time they're going to meet up with Dr. Howard and stuff, and then he just dies right there.
Crazy. So then they start working with his assistant, Jeff Bates, the whole time. But then the Brennans are working with Jeff in Dr. Howard's office, and some guys come in and trap him in there, and they set off a bomb, or they set a timer on a bomb, and so they're trying to find a lock for a window or something, was
mm-hmm,
it?
Mm-hmm.
To get out.
Get out the fire escape.
And he's like, oh, no, not that one, no, not this one. And it's just like all this tension building up.
That's a lot of tension.
It was so funny because it's like he's like just casually sorting through this ring of keys, and it's like...
And there's a bomb 3 feet away from him.
Getting ready to blow up, yeah.
Everybody else sounds really stressed out. We only had 25 seconds left. No, it's not this one. No. Oh, I have it. Oh, yes. Well, hurry up and put it in there. There's only 10 seconds left. Oh, I got this.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, nothing to worry about.
That was great. And, of course, Akiva, with his mixing up of sayings, of idioms and stuff. And in this episode, he's like... So makes a comment of like something keeps turning up like a bad shekel.
Exactly.
Then they get on the plane.
Yes.
And of course, something always goes wrong when I'm on a plane.
Yeah.
Of course, you hear that the plane is sabotaged beforehand.
Uh-huh.
So you know something's going to go wrong. You're just like waiting for the plane to go down, you know?
Yep. And we always, you know, a trip to the Sahara wouldn't be complete without stumbling across several thousand mines.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Blowing up. But this is really a cool thing, though. Like, there's... What's that kid's name that's with them? That's
Amin.
From the church? Yeah, Amin.
Yep.
And, like, they're out standing in the desert.
Like,
and
this just, brilliant like, kid.
This, yeah, like, Jonathan Park's like a doctor, and you got, like, all these kids, you know, that are just, like, amazing, like, junior scientists and stuff, and this kid's like, I have an idea. He's like, what's that?
Like, makes
like,
a metal detector.
Makes a metal detector and digs a hole in the ground and just, like, collects water. It's like, oh, this is a great idea. That's pretty cool, though. I thought it was neat. The metal detector thing was cool.
Yeah.
I was like, no, definitely. That's not true. Awesome. Then you got the guy at the end saying, and you really can do this with it. I'm like, I'm going to do that.
Yeah,
and
that's
doesn't
even
make
cool.
a comment like, just don't do it around a landmine or something like
that. Yeah, it's really funny. Yeah.
But, I mean, Akiva stumbling on that landmine, and he's like, oh, they almost got an Israeli after all these years.
I think it's real funny. Like, he hits his toe on that rock.
Right.
And he's like, who put that there? And Jonathan's like, Noah's flood.
Yeah. Like, he's like, and it's been just sitting here for a few thousand years waiting to stub my toe.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And he throws it and it blows up.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Another example of them taking a name brand and switching it up is instead of a Land Rover that comes to rescue them, it's a Desert Rover.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's really funny.
All right. Episodes 9 and 10, The Brotherhood of Sobek. Starts off with the Brotherhood attacking the church, which was a pretty intense scene there.
Yeah.
It was.
But they won't go inside the church, like part of their, right?
Oh, did they not?
No, they never did.
They did not.
They never did. They couldn't do it. That's like part of their code or ethics or whatever you want to call
really?
It. But yeah, they can't go inside the church.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Yep.
I liked, though, I mean, it was really neat how the pastor's like, you know what? We're going to just have church anyway.
And that's
know?
A really cool scene. They start singing and stuff.
Yep, that and is... all the stuff going on outside, but they just keep singing.
Yeah, that's
cool.
A really neat scene.
And they did really good at getting the church sound.
Yeah, they did.
With all those voices.
People
and
singing.
Really
yeah.
Good. I was wondering how they did that. They actually go and just hire a choir. I'm sure that's probably what they did, but it's neat.
Yeah. The only thing I thought about that scene was like, I wonder if the Egyptian church is really seeing A Mighty Fortress as our God.
I don't know. I thought the same thing, but I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
They might.
Yeah. Never know.
Well, and I can't remember exactly where it was in this episode, but shortly after that scene at the church where Akiva says something like, I can't wait to tour another minefield. That was a real blast.
Pun intended.
Yeah.
Ba-dum-tsh.
It really happened.
Another interesting scene was in and near the antique shop when they're researching that dagger. That whole, all of the people inside the shop are freaked out about it. And then all this stuff happens. Another customer overhears what's going on. And then they meet this other group. What were they called? The Rashidi?
The Rashidi.
Something like that.
The wise ones, I believe is what it is.
And the leader's name is Jabari. And he makes a comment like, or he has a, his like assistant dude who kind of sounds like Frankenstein to me.
Exactly. Yeah.
But he comes up and he's all got this knife and he's got a cloak on and everything. And then Jabari says, I apologize for the cloak and dagger tactics.
Laughs at his own joke.
Yeah, it was good though.
But the Parks were not amused.
No, they weren't. He's like, I don't appreciate it. He puts on his intimidating voice.
Exactly.
Dr. Kendall Park. I don't appreciate how your bodyguard just pushes me around or whatever. Yeah. It's funny.
And we should mention, I mean, Frank Montenegro really does a great job with the character of Kendall.
He does.
Definitely.
Yeah. Everything. Yeah. Good.
So in this episode, they actually find out that the stele, or that tablet that they had discovered, was a fake.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Was it a Windows tablet?
No. I'm just, huh? No.
I asked if it was a Windows tablet.
Oh. Then...
First, no one is surprised it's a fake. And it would be if it was a Windows tablet, but...
Well...
No, that's good. JD got his Android spot. We just got our...
That's right. That's right.
I don't even own a Windows tablet.
I don't think anybody likes Windows tablets. It's like 0.8% market share. I don't think anybody likes Windows tablets.
Yeah, okay.
Although they just released a new one and it's supposed to get better, so I don't know.
Yeah. So, the fake tablet.
Back from the tech news.
Yeah.
Exactly. We should do a tech news spot.
But they find this out because they find this photograph of it in Dr. Howard's files, mm-hmm. which was dated. Like, who timestamps their photos anymore? But that's funny.
Yeah.
I guess if it's printed out, maybe. It has a timestamp on it, on the back, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't printed out photos in a very long time. So
yeah, me neither. Then the Brennans and the Parks kind of split up, and they each go to research a different area, still trying to track down pieces to the journal. And the Brennans get... I don't know if you could really call it kidnapped because they didn't really go anywhere, but they were kind of held hostage there for a few moments.
Right.
But they had this awesome, clever way of escaping from the Effendi's men. It was awesome. There's too many people around, so they have to... They don't want to make a scene, and so they just kind of, hey, we're trying
someone.
To find such and such a place, and can you help us? And that was cool.
Like, you're just going to let them go?
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, that was a clever way to get away. And then also at the end of this episode... Dr. Kendall. Bye-bye. He leaves us. No, not.
He leaves us.
Whether permanently or not permanently, we will not say.
That you will have to find out.
But
he is kidnapped.
Well, they get trapped in that other place first.
That's true.
And they have to send out Sphinx. That cat comes in handy.
What a great puma, I tell you.
Yes. It's always handy to have a puma around.
I know, pumas running around, just like saving people and lives and things and... It goes out and save, like they put the little walkie-talkie watch on.
Mm-hmm.
Walkie-talkie watch. I don't know, what's their fancy name?
Communicator
for it?
Watch?
Communicator watch.
It's called that an iWatch.
iWatch, yes. They put the iWatch on the puma and it's walking around. But this is funny. That, what is
that
it?
British that, couple?
Yes! I know. And their daughter, the cat is talking. Like, it's so... I died laughing listening to this. It was so funny. Then I came back to life, and it was hilarious.
You recovered from your death?
Yes. It was so funny. Like, the lady faints. One of the mom or the dad faints because the cat is talking or whatever. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Oh, they have talking cats.
The granddaughter, Cecily, was actually played by Grace Riffenberg, who is Andrew Riffenberg, one of the writers, his sister.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that was cool. I loved that whole scene there with the British couple.
Well, the puma saves their lives and they get out of there. Spoiler alert.
And you're saying that then Dr. Kendall is kidnapped.
Yes.
Later on.
Then again.
Good. There is just so much that happens.
Yeah.
These are two packed trapped episodes.
But what another cool thing is, like, he's communicating with another prisoner via Morse code. I'm like, that is so cool.
Yeah, he's just sitting there in his cell, all of a sudden tap, 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 tap. He's like, what is this? Morse code. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ingenious. There's so many little different things that they worked into the story. I'm like, that is so cool.
Yeah. Really neat stuff.
Then finally.
Yes.
The end.
Yes. The last episode of The Whispering Sphinx, parts 1 and 2. This is my favorite.
And it is titled, strangely enough, The Whispering Sphinx.
Which is strangely enough, it doesn't whisper. It just, like, speaks in a loud voice.
Very true. Yeah.
It does kind of just, like, the Sphinx is more like, you know, just, oh, the curse is coming without even
whispering at all. Yeah. The curse is coming.
No. We're, like, shouting from the rooftops.
Exactly.
Shouting from the Sphinx tops.
So this whole part starts off out in the Mediterranean Sea on a British aircraft carrier. I'm like, what?
It threw me for a loop. I'm like, what in the world? What are we doing out here?
And all of a sudden, this Harrier jump jet gets stolen off of the... I'm like, what?
And honestly, like, I didn't... When I listened to it the second time, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it now. I didn't get that in the first time I listened to that. I'm like,
oh, yeah?
That scene, like, made no sense to me at all. And then I listened to it. I was like, oh, duh. I'm like, okay.
And in this episode... Kendall finally comes face to face with the Effendi.
The Effendi. Yes, he does.
The two antagonists face each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then we find out, what? The CIA is involved?
This is true.
Counterterrorism, espionage. I'm like, yes, I love it.
Yeah, everything comes in. And then we learn that Akiva can just, like, fly Harrier jump jets and things. Yeah. He's like...
But here's another thing that they worked in, which is, I love these true facts. That how he said, well, I did my time in the Israeli Air Force.
Yes, right. Everybody.
Every single citizen is required to serve in the military in Israel. So that's cool.
That is really cool. It was neat how they worked some of this, like, Harrier jump jets escaping out of silos, and they have, like, this whole dogfight between two aircraft.
Yeah.
You know, and the sound effects for that was pretty good. Like, I was trying to think of how in the world could you get, you know, two jets fighting, you know? It was pretty good. And of course, Jonathan's with him. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yes.
So. And he would be. What?
Go ahead. I was just saying he would be.
Yeah.
Jonathan would be with Akiva.
Oh, yeah. Of course. They're like partners or something.
Yeah.
But of course, you have Akiva in his old truck, and he names her Annabelle. That cracked me up.
The old Annabelle needs some water.
She's thirsty.
Yeah. So funny. Oh, and then there's another one. There's another one of those, what'd you call them earlier in the show? Those quotes, but like WD-50.
Oh, the name brand things.
Name brand things. That's it. Thank you. Well, in this one, they talk about Colonel Sanford's fried chicken.
Yeah. Country fried chicken.
Country fried chicken. Yeah.
I know.
CFC.
Yeah.
Yes. CFC. Yeah, that's great.
That was hilarious. Yeah. One of my favorite things in this two-parter was when Jonathan's talking to Akiva, and he's like, can you really get about the jet? Can you really get this out of this silo? And Akiva's like, of course. And then kind of under his breath, if not, it's going to be a short trip. And Jonathan's like, what'd you say? And he's like, don't forget to strap on your helmet.
Yeah. It was like, didn't even rhyme with what he said in the beginning.
I know.
It just, like, just totally comes with some random thing.
Again, Akiva is an amazing character. I mean, his lines... He's like, gotta love that 30mm cannon. Yeah. What a pop gun.
Yeah. They end up destroying things.
But here's a cool thing. It seems like everything always comes back to Odyssey to me. I mean, there's always a connection somewhere. But they run into Eddie's dad on the ship. And I'm like, that totally reminds me of Lawrence in Aloha Oi.
Yep. And when I was listening in... you know, the midst of the story, and Eddie was mentioning how his dad's gone. He's a Navy pilot. I was like, they're so going to bring him in at the end. Like, you know, it's going to happen.
For sure.
There's a few things we don't want to spoil too much at the end there, if you haven't heard it yet. So we're not going to give too many details, but towards the end, Dr. Park is trapped in this thing, this pit, I guess. There was a trap door. I mean, how cliche is a trap door at the end? You know, the villain pulls a lever and there goes, you know, but Karabo, he says, I know this is melodramatic, but I've always enjoyed a cliffhanger. Yeah.
Which if you just put two and two together.
Yeah.
Effendi, Karabo.
True. Yeah, and we kind of know that throughout the whole thing. That
right.
Karabo is the Effendi.
Yep, exactly.
Director Kelso is allergic to cats. I thought that was so funny to throw that in there.
He's like sneezing all over the place.
And then, like, one of the best parts in the entire series is Akiva dressed as a Coptic priest to take over the transmitter. Mm. And he's all starts talking to Karabo, and he's like, I wouldn't trust you to look after a dog I didn't like.
Oh, it's great.
Or a camel, for that matter.
Yes. I think that last scene is just amazing because, like, everyone's just mystified by this guy, and the Sphinx is talking and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, he just, like, it's like, you are the one. He's like, yes, I'm the one. He's like repeating everything the Sphinx says. He's like, you are great. He's like, you are a liar. He's like, yes. I am a liar. He's like, what? Yeah, awesome. And the crowd starts going crazy and stuff. It's so funny. And like everyone's like, because they're used, I think it's so cool that they use a parabolic
transmitter. Yeah.
That is amazing. That just a beam of sound is like, that is so cool.
Because there was no electricity running to the Sphinx.
Right, no wires, nothing. And so like they each take turns like talking to the parabolic transmitter because it's the same voice.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Oh, but the end is just makes it. It's great. It's great. You got to get this album.
Yeah.
Recommend it. It is amazing. The writing is good. The production is good. Music, sound effects. And if you like your own copy, check
this out. Absolutely.
Check this out, folks.
We have one. We're going to give
away. Wait for it.
Yep.
In a few more minutes.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, the storyline flows very well. I think even better than the last couple albums that we've heard. I think just the different elements, the characters are really developed nicely. I'm really, really getting into this series.
I am too. I like it. I listened to it several times.
Overall, I'm starting to really like these stories.
Yeah, overall. Me too.
I was just telling my wife the other day, you got to start listening to these because these are really, really good. So much action and adventure. And I mean, it's just a lot going on, but they still work in. And as you alluded to earlier, Andrew, sometimes it's not natural conversation where they work in a biblical point or a scripture reference or whatever. But as we've mentioned in a previous reviews, I guess that's just kind of the price you have to pay for this type of a series that they're doing.
Right.
So.
And it's neat. I like it. It's like it. My mom takes it, and she has them, and she's a teacher, and she takes them into her class. And the kids love
them. Yeah, they're perfect for that. They'd be perfect for
that. They go home, and their parents are like, we got to get these. And like it ends up like all these kids go and buy all these, you know, Jonathan Park series and stuff. It's great.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, really cool. I just thought I'd throw it out there that, you know, they're doing great. They're doing great with this stuff.
A couple of things that I wanted to point out. Personally, you guys may disagree, but I still think there's too many characters to keep track of. I would really like to see them pare things down a bit and make it a little easier to follow. Like, to me, the junior response team is completely unnecessary.
Mm.
Like, the Parks and the Brennans are enough to try to keep track of. They could have easily have rewritten that whole script and just had the different things happening to just the Parks and the Brennans. You know, it's just there's a lot of people to. I don't know of any other drama series that keeps that many characters going at the same time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
All in the same story arc and everything.
Yeah.
Like that. Yep.
I mean, of course, Odyssey has had many hundreds of characters over the years, but in any given story arc, there's never more than a few that are involved in these
each events. Piece. Yeah, and everything.
What do you guys think? Agree, disagree, or is it okay to you?
I think. Personally, I think it's okay to me. It doesn't bother me that much. But, I mean, I can see your point about the junior response team. But then who's going to do the research? Who's going to do all this great stuff? You know. But,
well,
I mean,
yeah, they could split up, though. Have Jesse and Jonathan go do some research while, you know, or something like that.
But maybe it's something like they work in, like, later on. The junior response team will, like, graduate and become, like, the official CRT team or something.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. I don't know.
But, I mean, it seems like Thad, he's mentioned, like, twice in the entire 12 episodes, and he has, like, two lines, it seems like. You know, it's like they're trying to work them in just because they know they have these characters there, and they want to use them so that... And I just think it could have... Maybe I'm just too picky. I don't know. But... And a couple other things, and we mentioned this previously, and it was not nearly as bad in this series, but the pronunciations, they're not all on the same page. All of the actors are not on the same page. Through the whole series, the Effendi, his name is General Carabo, but there's a couple times a character calls him Carabo.
Huh.
And it's like, they need to be on the same page. The director needs to notice whenever these actors... Are you know, it makes it easier for the listener to follow what's going on when they're, because there's a lot of weird names that are unfamiliar to Americans, you know?
Right.
So if they're all pronounced the same way by the characters, it makes it easier to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And another one where one of the locations that they're referring to is Zoan, and somebody says Zoan, somebody says Zoin, somebody says Zoan.
Huh.
So if they could just... You know, just keep them the same. Make sure everybody's pronouncing it the same way. It makes it easier to follow, especially for younger kids. I mean, in this, that's who the target audience of this series is for kids.
Yeah.
And one more thing is that the dialogue, as you mentioned before, Andrew, is still a little bit stiff sometimes. Sometimes there's unnecessary things in the script.
Yes.
So it's like they state the obvious a lot of times.
I think so, too. I noticed one thing where one of the girls says to one of the boys, and I don't remember the exact reference, but he had just chased away the hyena in the desert.
Exactly.
And she's like, if you wouldn't have done that, we all would have died. And it's like, okay, yeah, exactly. I mean, of course.
That's so funny, because I had that exact reference in my notes, because... You know, your audience can infer a lot of things just from the sound or from the action that's going on. You don't have to always state what happened.
Right.
And I had that exact when Eddie rescues the girls. And then another one was when Amin puts together that makeshift metal detector.
Yeah.
And Akiva says, thanks to Amin, we're going to make it just fine. You know, it's like he didn't have to say that.
Right.
That was totally
And to be honest, you know what that sounds like to me is it sounds like a lot of when radio wasn't necessarily a practiced art, radio drama wasn't very developed. It's very old-time radio-ish in a lot of ways where they say things and it's just like, yeah, okay. Especially when you're talking about a series that was geared really toward really young kids.
Mm-hmm.
Little kid shows and old-time radio would do that a lot. And that's what it reminds me of, anyway.
Yeah. And I don't want to belabor this point too much, but one other instance, when they finally make it to Shadwan Island and they start off the scene, like the previous scene, they had been rescued by the Desert Rover.
Right.
But then the next scene opens, they're on the island.
Yeah.
Well, in order to transition the listener to where they are, they again state, they just like spell it all out. You don't have to do that. And again, I'm not an expert, but it's just something that I observed. One of the female characters, I don't remember if it's one of the girls or one of the mothers, because I get their voices confused sometimes because they're very similar. But they said, Akiva, thank you for all you do for us. Like renting that boat for us when we, you know, they didn't have to, you know. So that's just another example. It didn't have to be said. Because a few moments later, Jim says, well, you know, the Israelites crossed on dry ground, but we took a boat. You know, that would have been sufficient to let the listener know, hey, they rented a boat and got over here now.
Yeah. Right.
So, just a couple of points. Other than that, man, we really, really do enjoy these series. The music, as you said, Roy, was really good. And I found out that they don't even have a composer. They're using stock music for this, but they do really good.
They do.
At choosing the music to fit the scene really
right.
well.
Right. I noticed
that. Yeah, I agree.
I think when we were talking to Pat about that, he said that they did that.
Yeah, and I actually had forgotten that, so I asked him again just the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And he told me where they get their music. But, I mean, some of these scenes, I'm like, wow, that has to be written specifically for that. But no, none of it is. So that's
really well.
A couple of cool facts that I wanted to mention is that the Effendi's number two man, Omar, he was played by a guy named Amir Hafez. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but he is... an Egyptian who was once a tour guide at the real Great Pyramid in Egypt.
Oh, that's cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
Huh.
And Pastor Daniel Adin, who was the Christian pastor in was that in Cairo? That was in Cairo, right?
I believe so.
He's played by Christian comedian Nazareth. Have you ever heard of Nazareth?
No.
I've heard of him before. I've never heard of any of his material, but I thought, wow, that is so cool.
That is neat.
And his son, Amin, was actually played by Nazareth's real son, John.
Oh, great.
That's really cool.
So great chemistry going on there.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So in the show notes is a link to Nazareth's website if you want to check him out. So I thought just some really cool facts that I found out. And one more thing about Grace Riffenberg. As I mentioned before, she was the British girl Cecily. But she also played a line on Adventures in Odyssey, the Inspiration Station Part 2, the very end of the episode where all those kids are talking to Connie on the radio saying how much they care about her and all this stuff. Grace is the girl who says, "We love you, Connie."
Oh, wow.
So I don't know how that happened. Because I had heard that Focus kind of put out the call and asked people to just call into their feedback line and leave messages.
Yeah.
So I think that's what happened here. But that's kind of cool to say that you got a voice on Odyssey. And you didn't even have to go through getting the show contest.
Yeah, exactly.
The gets.
So that's really cool. And you know where I got all this information is the Riffenbergs have a website called Jonathan Park Behind the Scenes. And they have all of these character bios and actor information and all this kind of stuff, synopses of all of the albums. So there's a link in the show notes for that website as well. Wow, that's a lot of information. But again, you got to check out this album. There's a link in the show notes if you want to go purchase it on Amazon or wherever else it is available. But, of course, we're going to give one away.
Yeah.
So in order to be the lucky person or to attempt to be the lucky person, all you have to do is leave a comment on the show notes for this episode. So go to audiotheatercentral.com/38.
Mm-hmm.
Leave us a comment, and everybody's name who leaves a comment in the next couple of weeks is going to be put in the hat. We'll draw a name out, and we'll send you your very own copy of Jonathan Park, The Whispering Sphinx.
Yeah, great.
Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, Audio Theater Central.
Hey, guys, this is Austin Peachy.
Hello, JD, Roy, and Andrew. My name is Victoria.
Now, yesterday, I received a letter from a big fan.
No time to chat. I've got an email list.
Another package for me today.
No, it's actually just your mail.
All right, let's jump into some feedback.
All right, first of all, we have an email from Will. This is on episode 36. He says, "Hey there, Andrew, Roy, and JD. Hey, I like that. I put my name first.
I know, I noticed that.
Here are my thoughts on your reviews of Passages Darien's Rise. The first thing I noticed while listening to the review was that you didn't say anything except for a slight mention at the end that Passages was originally..." Ooh, I take issue with that. "Originally an Odyssey book series written by Paul McCusker. You could have made that a little more clear for those who didn't know."
Let me address that real quick before you finish. We did it. We were all aware of that. I'm pretty sure you guys knew that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, we're focusing on audio drama, so we didn't...
Right.
I mean, we were aware of it, and I guess we could have mentioned it, but since our focus is audio drama, I didn't put as much of an emphasis on that, so...
And that's why we talked more about the Fletcher's Rebellion than we did...
Yeah.
...any other part of the Passages series. And didn't Fletcher's Rebellion come out before the books?
That's a good question. I don't remember.
I'm almost positive that it did. I'm not 100%, but I'm almost positive that it did. And in that case, then we would have to say originally it was an audio drama. So let's have our crack research team get on that.
Yeah, right.
And I'm sure find out for sure.
We'll have a listener correct us if we're wrong on that.
Exactly.
So please do, actually. Go ahead.
Feel free. The reason Kyle's eyes didn't change color was because he wasn't chosen in the same way Anna was, I think. It actually isn't always the girls whose eyes change color. Aaron's judgment, Glenall's betrayal, Draven's defiance, and Findar's legacy feature boys whose eyes change color, while Darien's rise, Aniston's risk, and Findar's legacy feature girls.
Mm.
And I think probably this would be going back to the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're focusing on the audio drama, not the books.
And I personally haven't read any of the books.
Right.
I actually own one, but I was trying to get the whole series, and I haven't got them yet. So I'll read them eventually, but...
Not yet. Thank you for telling us that, though, because I haven't read them either, so I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Right.
So until they produce them on audio drama, I don't think I ever will know that either. I think the Tintin story you referred to in this episode was the Blue Lotus, in which Mitsu Hirato thinks he injected Tintin with Rajeja's juice, the poison of madness, and Tintin pretends that it made him mad to throw Mitsu Hirato off.
And I think he is right. I just kind of threw in that Tintin reference, and I couldn't remember which book it came from, but that's cool that a listener picked up on that and knew what I was talking about.
So. Yeah, that's neat. Then we got a comment from Austin Peachy. He said, I just finished Volume 9 of Jonathan Park. It is mind-blowingly epic. I like that. So much action and humor. It definitely beats The Copper Scroll by a mile. If you buy any radio drama this year, this should be it. This time, Jonathan Park has more adventure in this album than AIO has in years. This album really made it seem really suspenseful. I can't think of another word to describe it. With the location they were in, it seemed natural. It didn't seem forced. I can see a lot of the explosions, riots, and such happenings in Egypt today.
And I think he hit the nail right on the head. I mean, right. That's a real good synopsis or summary of the overall feel of that album. Obviously, we just finished talking about it, but I think he really hit it right on. I'm not sure if I would say that it's more adventure than AIO has had in years, because, I mean, I thought The Labyrinth was pretty suspenseful and action-packed. So, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah.
You know, that's a hard one to judge.
Yeah.
I think that that's making an exaggerated statement. That's what I think it is.
Although there's a lot of action in this. I don't know.
And our crack research team has come back with a verdict.
Oh, great.
So, Passages, the original Fletcher's Rebellion, was released in 1999, and the first book came out in 2005.
Aha.
Okay, perfect.
So,
thank you, research team.
Yes, thank you.
Man, we need to pay those guys more.
I know.
No kidding.
I'm telling you.
That was a quick little job at getting an answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that'll do it for this episode. Again, check us out, audiotheatercentral.com. Of course, show notes, audiotheatercentral.com/38. Leave your comment to be entered into the drawing.
Yep.
And if you're listening to this in the future and the contest is over, please leave a comment anyway, because we want to hear from you.
Yeah. Let us know what you think of the show.
And there's a few other ways where you can give us some feedback.
You can email us. And our email address is feedback@audiotheatercentral.com.
You can also call or send a text message to our feedback hotline, which is 623-688-2770.
Well, that'll wrap it up. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Audio Theater Central is a production of Radio CSS Media. RadioCSS.com.
And for all of you rabid Jonathan Park fans, be sure to listen to episode 39, which will have some amazing in-depth conversation and behind-the-scenes information about Jonathan Park, The Whispering Sphinx, directly from the writers Dwayne and Andrew Riffenberg. It's going to be amazing information, so check that out. Now would be a good time to insert that sound effect. AudioTheaterCentral.com.